5. On that Wednesday night, the July moon had risen as bloated and orange as a gigantic tropical fruit. By early Thursday morning, as Fred Peterson stood in his backyard on the footstool where he had rested his feet during many a Sunday afternoon football game, it had shrunk to a cold silver coin riding high overhead. He slipped the noose around his neck and yanked it until the knot rested against the angle of his jaw, as the Wikipedia entry had specified, complete with helpful illustration. The other end was attached to the branch of a hackberry tree, like the one beyond Ralph Anderson's fence, although this one was a rather more elderly representative of Flint City's flora, having sprouted around the time an American bomber was dropping its payload on Hiroshima. Surely a supernatural event to the Japanese who witnessed it at a distance great enough to save them from being vaporized. The footstool rocked back and forth unsteadily beneath his feet. He listened to the crickets and felt the night breeze, cool and soothing after one hot day and before another he did not expect to see, on his sweaty cheeks. Part of his decision to draw a line under the Flint City Petersons and call the equation complete was a hope that Frank, Arlene, and Ollie had not gone far, at least not yet. It might still be possible to catch up. More of it was the unbearable prospect of attending a double funeral in the morning at the same mortuary, Donnelly Brothers, that would bury the man responsible for their deaths in the afternoon. He couldn't do it. He looked around one final time, asking himself if he really wanted to do this. The answer was yes. And so he kicked the footstool away, expecting to hear the crack of his neck breaking deep in his head before the tunnel of light opened before him. The tunnel with his family standing at the far end, beckoning him to a second and better life where harmless boys were not raped and murdered. There was no crack. He had missed or ignored the part in the Wikipedia entry about how a certain drop was necessary to break the neck of a man weighing 205 pounds. Instead of dying, he began to strangle. As his windpipe closed and his eyes bulged in their sockets, his previously drowsing survival instinct awakened in a clangor of alarm bells and a glare of interior security lights. In a space of 3 seconds, his body overrode his brain and the desire to die became the brute will to live. Fred raised his hands, groped, and found the rope. He pulled with all his strength. The rope slackened, and he was able to draw a breath, necessarily shallow, because the noose was still tight, the knot digging into the side of his throat like a swollen gland. Holding on with one hand, he groped for the branch to which he had tied the rope. His fingers brushed its underside and loosed a few flakes of bark that fluttered down onto his hair. But that was all. He was not a fit man in his middle age, most of his exercise consisting of trips to the fridge for another beer during one of his beloved Dallas Cowboys football games. But even as a high school kid in phys ed, 5 pull-ups had been the best he could do. He could feel his one hand grip slipping and grabbed the rope with his other hand again, holding it slack long enough to pull in another half-breath, but unable to yank himself any higher. His feet swung back and forth 8 inches above the lawn. One of his slippers came off, then the other. He tried to call for help, but all he could manage was a rusty wheeze. And who would possibly be awake to hear him at this hour of the morning? Nosy old Mrs. Gibson next door? She would be asleep in her bed with a rosary in her hand, dreaming of Father Brixton. His hand slipped. The branch creaked. His breath stopped. He could feel the blood trapped in his head pulsing, getting ready to burst his brains. He heard a rasping sound and thought, it wasn't supposed to be like this. He flailed for the rope, a drowning man reaching for the surface of the lake into which he has fallen. Large black spores appeared in front of his eyes. They burst into extravagant black toadstools. But before they overwhelmed his sight, he saw a man standing on the patio in the moonlight, one hand resting possessively on the barbecue where Fred would never grill another steak. Or maybe it wasn't a man at all. The features were crude, as if punched into being by a blind sculptor. And the eyes were straws.